Do you understand the ramifications that this case could have?
It was supposed to be a system that benefited all sides.
So here's the $64,000 question.
COVID-19, in my opinion, is the meteorite that hit the earth.
It's headed to the Supreme Court in a bunch of different lanes.
Tell us about that.
Welcome to Civilly Speaking with host Sean Harris. Each month, Civilly Speaking brings you interviews on practical and timely legal issues on the local and national level.
We hope these stories inspire you and remind you of the impact we have as advocates for our clients. We'll see you here on the next episode of Civilly Speaking.
Hello, and welcome to Civilly Speaking, OAJ's podcast for trial lawyers by trial lawyers. I'm your host, Sean Harris. And today we're very excited to have with us nationally recognized trial consultant, speaker, and certified coach, Sari de la Motte. Before we get started, a quick sponsor message. Preferred Capital provides an easy solution for your client's lawsuit funding needs. While your clients wait for their cases to settle, PCF can get them cash to pay off their bills and focus on recovery. PCF's approval process is simple. Within 1 to 2 days, your client and his or her family can receive peace of mind and prioritize the things that really matter. For more information, contact Jason Porter at jason@pcfcash.com. As I mentioned earlier, our guest today has trained extensively with an internationally recognized authority in nonverbal communication, which I hear is kind of important, and is an expert in nonverbal intelligence. Her book, From Hostage to Hero, Captivating the Jury by Setting Them Free, is published by Trial Guides in the fall of 2019 and is the first and only book,
That's right.
To receive over 100 five-star reviews. Sari, thanks so much for joining us here on Civilly Speaking.
Oh, you're so welcome. And to date, I think we're at 122 reviews. So if your listeners have, if they have read the book, please go and give us a review. I have a new goal of 500 reviews. So I would love to hear from you.
I read the book for what it's worth, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
Oh, thank you.
Let's start at the beginning.
All right.
We're talking about...
Let's start at the very beginning. Sorry, Sound of Music just came in my head. Okay.
That's right. We're talking about trials and trial lawyers. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest obstacle for trial lawyers heading into trial?
Their brains, by far, is
Our
the biggest
Our own brains
obstacle.
Are sabotaging us.
That's right. I mean, when I ask my seminar attendees, you know, who's the enemy at trial? You know, I'll never forget this. Somebody shouted out from the audience, the jurors. And I think that's what y'all think, is that the jurors are the problem. You've slaved over your case for weeks, months, sometimes years. And now you have to hand it to this bunch of amateurs, right? For a couple days, maybe a couple weeks. And they don't care about you. And they think you're terrible. And they think your client's just there for the money. And they're the problem. They're the problem. They're the problem, which is what I saw as the problem when I first got into this field. We have our sights trained on the wrong enemy. Now, I know it's weird to say that your brain is the biggest obstacle, but until you learn, and which is so much of the work that we do at H2H, to train your brain, you're never going to be truly successful, because your brain is wired to make sure that you stay safe. And one of the most unsafe professions in the world, I don't mean physically safe, I mean psychologically safe, is trial lawyering, right? I mean, you put up all this money, you take this huge risk to go to trial. And so your brain is wired to go, what the frick are you doing? And so it tries to have you take any opportunity to get out of that. That's why we settle cases that should go to trial, to take the easy way out, to not go balls to the wall, storytelling, whatever it may be. Your brain is trying to keep you safe. And that's great. And we love our brains for that. But we've evolved past that. And so that's why I say that's the biggest obstacle, is because until and unless you train your brain to work with you so that you can go in there and do what is required of truly great trial attorneys, you're never going to be successful in this profession.
Well, and that was one of the big kind of eye-opening takeaways that I got from your book, which is, you know, us trial lawyers, we've been conditioned to think jurors are out to get us. They're out to kill our case. Yep. And mm-hmm. if that's the attitude that you go into trial with, you get what you put out. Right?
That's exactly right. What we focus on, we create.
And so instead of trying to, quote, deselect the bad ones, we should be creating lists of what are the beliefs that jurors would have to believe in order to vote for us.
That's exactly right. I mean, I say this in the book. What sense does it make if you're looking for, let's say, a paralegal and all of the applications start coming in and you're just furiously going through there looking for the bad ones? But we don't do that in real life, right? We go and we look, we see a bad one, we put it aside. But what we're looking for, what our intention is to find the best team member. Y'all have huge responsibility on your shoulders. These are huge, important cases that are going to change in many cases the way law is practiced. And y'all are going in there and you're so concerned with who's going to kill your case that you spend all of your voir dire time getting rid of them. And then you just are looking at whoever's left. I mean, that's just no way to build a team. You need the best people in there. And here's the good news is that y'all stand on the side of the right. The jurors want to help your side. They just don't know it yet. And they'll never know it if you continually focus on them as the enemy. They're already in fight or flight, right? Jury selection puts them there and puts their brains in a hostage place. And if you train your gun on them, you now keep them in their hostage state. And the number one thing that a hostage wants to do is to get out, is to be free. We know that that's not good for the plaintiff. The decision that they arrive at the fastest is not the decision that we want for plaintiff cases. But we put them there when we continue to see them as the enemy.
Well, and you make a good point. Obviously, the title of the book is Hostage the Hero. And lawyers probably don't take time to think about it. When people end up in the jury pool, how do they get there? They get a notice in the mail saying, you will show up. They go mm-hmm. into an unfamiliar place, stand over here, stay over there. They show up into a jury in a courtroom that is unfamiliar. And some idiot stands up and says, tell me about your hobbies.
Exactly. It's like,
guess the jurors are like, I don't want to talk about my hobbies.
The jurors are like, what is this, a first date or jury selection? What the heck? I don't know where y'all got that question, but as you know, from reading the book, it's like, I hate that question. It's such a waste of time to ask the jurors what their hobbies are. And because it's so much simpler, like we're like asking what their hobbies are, who's a manager at work. It's like this big secret mission. And then we go back in a room if we even have time to go in the room. I remember starting in criminal and we had all this time to pick juries. Now, when I pick juries with plaintiff cases, it's like, just look at each other and decide, right? So, but even if you have the time to go, it's like, let's look at this information that we've culled, which is nothing, and make educated guesses about who's great or who's not. My voir dire process is so much simpler than that. It's like, let's go in with what we're looking for and then ask them if they believe those things. And then we know.
Well,
like, who would have thought? It's that easy.
And I will tell you another kind of, light bulb moment that I took away from your book was the idea, again, that they're in this hostage mentality. They want to, mm-hmm. All things being equal, they want to get the hell out of there. Mm-hmm. But your technique gives them the freedom to decide to stay.
That's right.
Talk about that. I mean, the idea of saying to a jury pool, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't want to be here, I'm going to do everything in my power to get you out of here. I mean, that to me, that was revolutionary.
I think you're talking about the Designed Alliance, which is revolutionary, and everyone is loving that and freaking out about it. First of all, why freaking out? Because we don't want to give power to the jury. That's the one thing that, I mean, we talk about how powerful they are. But the minute that I put something in my book where I'm like, here's how you give power to them, everyone's like, that's revolutionary. And they're totally scared out of their wits to do it. So what we're talking about there is saying to the jury, look, this is how this process works. Because that's part of why they're in their hostage state, is because they have no certainty. They have no autonomy. They don't have any status. We tell them how important they are, but they don't feel important. They don't know anybody. The whole situation just feels unfair. So all five of those factors I just talked about are attacks on the brain. So they're in this hostage state. And what we are training our attorneys to do at H2H is to reverse that, is to try to give them back the certainty, the autonomy, the choice that has been taken away from them. As you just pointed out, they have no choice in this process, by saying, listen, here's how this works. We're going to have this conversation. We're going to talk about principles in the case. And after that conversation, I'm going to ask you if you want to be here or not. How does that sound? And most jurors are like, yeah, that sounds good.
You mean I get a choice?
You're right, exactly. And they say, and if you tell me you don't want to be here, then I'm going to try to let you go. Now who's in on the conversation? The jurors are like, oh, hell yeah, I'll have this conversation. Now, you have to put the caveat in, right? Because they're like, oh, the judge won't let you get away with it. The judge lets you get away with it. We've done it hundreds and thousands of times. But you have to put the caveat. Now, I don't have full control. I can't guarantee that you get to go home. All I am asking is your preference, and that I will try to do everything in my power to make sure that happens. But there's another side represented here. They get to make choices too. And so if you end up on the jury, and if you didn't want to be here, that's not something that happened because I wanted it to happen. And look at what I've done now. If they get on the jury and they don't want to be there, who made them get? I mean, just by that wording, that guy made them get on the jury, not me. And so we have found, and our attorneys have come back and they're like, this is incredible. I've been practicing for 30 years. I have never, ever had a voir dire where at the end I said, now who wants to be here? And everybody raised their hand. Everybody raised their hand that they wanted to be there. It's blowing people's minds. But when you give them some autonomy and then you get them invested in the case by looking at the principles in your case, instead of talking about hobbies and who's the manager at work and what they like to do in their free time, they start getting invested. Because again, I keep telling y'all, you stand on the side of the right. That's why, if you just share that with them, this is the side we're on. They go, oh, I want to be on that side. You want to think it's not that simple, but it really is that simple. And we have millions of dollars of verdicts to prove it.
And you mentioned a couple of times H2H. Just make sure our listeners know what you mean by that.
Yes, from hostage to hero. So I didn't start it with H2H, but everyone started calling it that. So it's kind of taken a life on its own. So we call it from hostage to hero, for short H2H. And we now have an H2H crew with it, which is a membership that you can join a couple times a year. Right now we're not open, but we will be open. And where you get to come and play with all this stuff. And we've got certified coaches back there helping you with all your cases and so on and so forth.
Well, so far, we've talked a lot about the substance of talking to jurors during voir dire. But of course, verbal communication is only part, and maybe only a small part of the total communication package. Tell us about the importance of nonverbal communication and body language in front of a jury.
So everyone's heard the research that says, you know, 93% of your communication is nonverbal, and that's been debunked. We do know that the majority in this way is what gets across, meaning if there is a mismatch between your words and your body language, the listener is going to go with the body language every time. That's the part of the message that they're going to believe. So I always give the example of if I come home and my husband, who does all of our cooking, because he's a trained chef, which is incredible. He's also a coach in our business. But if he's banging around in the kitchen and I say, what's wrong? And he goes, nothing. Right. So the word was nothing, but, you know, the way he said it is nonverbal. And that's the message, obviously, that's going to get across. And so I was talking about how body language starts in the brain. So this is why when we start the H2H method, we have a brand new course coming out called H2H Fundamentals. And in there, we start module one is all about how to learn how to love your jury. Because if you are thinking the jury is my enemy, they're here to kill me, I've got to kill them before they kill me, none of what you're going to learn in the H2H method is going to make any sense, because body language starts in the brain. What you think will get communicated. So if you're saying to the jury, you know, you can trust me, I want to trust you, let's have this conversation, but you're thinking, which one of you is going to kill me and I'm going to kill you first, that's going to get communicated in your body language. You just can't not communicate that. So we talk a lot about mindset. We have mindset coaching in the crew every month. We have two or three things on mindset coaching where you can sign up and get your mind right around yours. Cause I get it. I mean, I understand why we're scared of them, cause they do hold all the power, even though they feel powerless at the beginning. So you have to get your mind right. But there's other places where that's also true. Like when we're talking about money. So y'all deal in money. Right. So, I mean, this is why your job is so hard, because we don't talk about things in polite society, especially Western society. We don't talk about religion or politics, although that seems to be a lot right now that we are talking about. We're still probably not talking so much about sex and money. Right. So those four things are things that are not to be discussed. And yet you have to discuss them. That's your actual job. And everybody has money stuff. You have money stuff. Jurors have money stuff. So I see oftentimes when you're going in for the ask, whether that's at the end of the voir dire, which I always, if you can, suggest you do it there. But if it's in there or in opening or in closing, whatever your jurisdiction allows, so often I'll watch them when I'm coaching them. I'll say, and in this case, we're going to ask for $10 million. You know, there's something will happen in their body. Like, that's a lot of money. Ooh. And that sends a message to the jury of, oh, that's a lot of money. Man, this guy can't even, or this gal can't even own that money number. So we talk a lot about owning your money number and communicating that with confidence, because those messages get across to the jury. Here's another example. We, in our voir dire process, we take the jurors what we call a funnel, and we start with a bigger question, and then we just keep narrowing the question till we get down to the principle, and the jurors give us the principle in the case, which is so fun to have them actually giving us the things we hope that they believe. But in that process, we have what we call the devil's advocate question. So let's say they've all are rallying around the process that, or the principle that a company must test a product for safety before they put it out to market, right? So they've said that. Now we're going to throw in a devil's advocate question. We're going to say something like, yeah, but testing is expensive. I mean, do they really need to test every single product? Can't they just, you know, believe that it's safe? I mean, they've made other products that are safe. They don't have to test everything, right? And then the jurors go, what? No, of course they do. Now, notice, if I don't change my voice, and I've been doing this great voir dire and the jurors are loving me, and I go, yeah, but we don't have to test every product, do we? I make it sound believable. And the jurors go, let me think about that, because you've been so credible and believable in our H2H process, and you say the devil's advocate question in a very credible, believable voice, the jurors start actually looking at it like, well, let's think about that. Testing is expensive. So there's a great example of, you got to change your voice. You got to sound like this is the stupidest thing ever. Like, we're all in the same joke, right, jurors? Like, yeah, they don't have to test everything, right? And yet so many times y'all are not willing to go there. You're not willing to go outside of your normal range, which is another reason why we've got a certified vocal coach in the H2H membership that you have access to, because we want you playing with all of these nonverbal pieces that are just going to really bring home the message to the jurors, what's important and why it's important.
Talk to us about when we're talking about body language, that there are times that we want to appear authoritative, and we want to be communicating information. And there are other times when we want to be receptive to and open to receiving information. And our body language sends messages on those issues.
Yeah. So the authoritative body language is when you're standing, or even when you're seated like I am now, you're more straight up and down. If you're using your palms to gesture, the palms are down, the chin is down, and you can hear my voice curls down, right? People are more in tune with your voice than any other nonverbal. Where the approachable body language is maybe off to the side a little bit, the palms are up, notice that my voice has changed, my head is kind of tilted to the side. What we have found is that jurors cue in to what body language and voice pattern you're using to tell them what to do. If we go back to, jurors have no idea why they're there. They're hostages. They're like, what do I do? Why am I here? What's the process? Then we start jury selection and we just say, okay, so let me ask you this. And we don't use the proper tone of voice, and the jurors are like, do I talk to you now? What, like, is it my turn? They don't know what to do. So lots of you resort to raise your hand and talk to me about, right? You use all this extra verbal. Listen, the jurors are going to be barraged with verbal content for the next several weeks. So try to limit your verbal and go nonverbal instead. So you, when you ask the jurors a question, I want you to get over to the side. I want you to change your voice. I want you to raise your hand and say, who here has ever shared the highway with a semi-truck, or depending on where you are in the country, an 18-wheeler, right? My voice and my body language now communicates to the jury what is appropriate to do. It makes them breathe lower and go, oh, it's my turn to talk, right? Now, when I'm going into opening, I'm going to use more of that authoritative. Now, here is how heart surgery needs to be done correctly. There are four steps. Notice my voice is now curling down. I'm now sending information. And that's the basic rule of thumb. When you are sending information, you want to be authoritative. In this case, we're going to be asking for $100 million. Boom. Voice curls down, palms are down. I'm owning that. But when I'm asking the jurors for information, so who here's ever been or who here has experience with, I'm going to be using that open palm. I'm going to be changing my voice because that cues jurors into, now it's your turn to talk. So that's how we use the authoritative and approachable in our work.
Now, do trial lawyers have to breathe? Is breathing important during a trial?
I think what you're saying is breathing well. Yes, for sure. So y'all are breathing. At least I hope you are. But one of the reason, one of the reasons we want you to be extra cautious or aware of your breathing patterns are two reasons, actually, is one is that breathing is communicated. So if you are not breathing well, what I mean by that is you short breaths, you're doing inhalation, exhalation too fast, too quickly. All of the air is up in the top part of your chest. It's going to start to change your voice pattern. Notice how now if I'm going to use the approachable voice pattern, now I sound kind of ditzy and stupid. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about. And if I'm using the authoritative voice pattern, now I sound angry. So, I mean, what is voice tone? It's breathing plus the voice pattern that you're using. That's what tone is. So when I'm breathing well in the lower part of my abdomen, filling up my lungs, taking that pause, and I'm using the approachable, now I just sound friendly. If I'm using the authoritative, now I sound definitive and fair. So it changes your voice, but it, so it gets communicated, but it also communicates whether you're nervous or all of the things. The number one thing, the jury may hate you. I'm not saying they don't. At least at the beginning, they're like, this is the person why we're here. That's their, they filed suit. I mean, they don't understand that the reason we're here is because the defense didn't take responsibility. They don't get that yet, right? They think you're the reason, but they may hate you, but you need to really calm your voice down and calm your breathing down to get them calm and thinking rationally. Because that's the second thing. Breathing is also contagious. If you go in there and you're freaked out and you're thinking the jury's your enemy and you're breathing high, you're going to communicate that. And the jury's going to start breathing higher than they already are. And then everybody's in fight or flight and the whole thing goes to hell in a handbasket. So you've got to go against the system and train yourself to breathe well. Part of that, I keep coming back to mindset, is coming in with, these people want to help me. They just don't know it yet. Wait till they hear my voir dire. Wait till they hear what this case is about. I can't wait for them to hear about this. They're going to help me. I know they are. Because here's the thing. They may hate you at the beginning, but nobody wants to see a speaker who's nervous and not handling themselves on stage.
Painful.
That's uncomfortable for everybody. Yeah. So you got to get your breathing under control and own the hell out of that space. And that's going to calm everybody down. We talk a lot about leadership. You'd be a leadership leader in court. And people come to me and they go, what the hell does that mean? I say it means breathing, basically. I mean, I believe you can't be a leader if you're not, don't know how to breathe well under stressful conditions. Imagine if it was an actual hostage situation and somebody comes in, they're like, oh my God, this is a hostage situation. Come on, follow me. No one's going to go after that person. Person comes in and goes, look, it's dangerous. Yes, but we've got a way out. They've got their stuff handled. And so that's what breathing communicates. I've got this handled. I've got you. I get you out of this. Just stay with me. People say, well, how do I become a better breather? I say, just become aware of it. Your body knows what to do. Most of the time you're not aware of it. So it's just start thinking, I'm holding my breath. And a minute that you think that, even if listening to this podcast right now, you probably took a breath. It's kind of like yawning. So just pay attention. Your body's got you. that's really as complicated as that is.
We've talked about body language and being intentional as attorneys with our body language. Talk to us about trying to read and or misread body language of jurors and how sometimes we get it wrong.
You know, we often get it wrong. So I talk a lot about cats and dogs. I don't usually use this terminology in the book because it required a longer conversation. But the basic gist is someone who consistently uses authoritative body language. And so you've seen this juror in the box where the arms are crossed, their chin is down, they never smile. And we're like, oh my God, this juror hates me. No, it just means that this juror is issue oriented. They're cat. They're like, what am I here to do? Tell me how to do it. Loyal cats, you want them way more than you want the dogs, which is the approachable, which is everything's good. And I really like you. And they're nodding. And you're like, ooh, this juror loves me. And then the dog personality goes home and it's like, oh my God, you wouldn't believe this stupid lawyer I saw today, right? Because dogs have private and public behavior, right? So it's polite to be polite in public, but in private, they're going to rip you to shreds if they will. Not they don't want always. I'm just saying that they have the two different, where cats are who they are all the way around. You might guess what kind of person I am. So you don't want to make up stories about that, right? It just means that your high issue, high authoritative jurors who don't make a lot of eye contact, crossing their arms, it just means they're more there for the issue. What do I need to do and how do I do it? Your dogs that are leaning forward and nodding and making you feel good about yourself, great, enjoy it. Just don't put a lot of stock into it. They're going to need a little bit more relationship. They're going to need more about what's the human element here. You need both on your jury. Just don't make up stories about it. That's why, again, y'all making this so confusing. You're asking these weird questions. You're reading body language. Just ask the jurors. They'll tell you. I have a whole free course on it. You go to sorryswears.com. You can get the free course. And it'll show you exactly how to get jurors. It's free to tell you whether they're for your case or not. It's not as complicated as you're making it. You don't need to read their body language. You don't need to hire me to read their body language. That's all that means.
You just got to ask them what their bumper stickers are.
Don't do that either.
Oh,
do it if you want to piss me off. But yeah, otherwise, don't do it.
And Sarah, do you have any webinars coming up?
We do. So we have several things. So there's the free course. If you go to sorryswears.com, there's the free course you can take. But we also have a webinar coming out on September 28th, and that is going to be at 12 p.m. Pacific. So I think that's 3 p.m. for you guys. When we surveyed our trial lawyers and we asked them, what is the one thing that you wish you had? And they said, I wish we could know how to read the jurors' minds. And so, as you can imagine, I have some thoughts about that. So we have a whole webinar on how to read jurors' minds. And if you go to sorryswears.com/live, because I'm going to be live teaching that day on that very thing, you can get on the list to be notified. Or if this podcast is going out that day, I believe it is, it should be live registered right there to be able to go to that webinar and get access right away. We also have the H2H Fundamentals course that is launching on September 28th. And that is going to have me walk you through step-by-step my voir dire opening and closing process. That's only going to be open for a week. So you can also get access to that on September 28th. It'll open that day and be open for a week.
Well, sorry. Thanks so much for joining us here on Civilly Speaking. We really appreciate it. This was awesome. For those of you who enjoyed our podcast today, mark your calendars in May of 2023. Sorry, we'll be here live and in person at our annual convention. Don't miss it.
I'm so glad to be here and so glad to see y'all in May. Finally, I think after the pandemic, I mean, you guys have been wanting me to come out for years, and finally at pandemic and then cancer, I'm coming. So I'll see you in 2023.
For all you listeners out there, if you like what you heard today, check out her podcast, From Hostage to Hero, for transformative advice on mindset shifts and innovative trial tips. If you like our podcast, be sure to subscribe on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Civilly Speaking.